We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And Lakers, basically in playoff mode right now, got three games left tonight facing the Golden State Warriors. I was not on yesterday's pod. Thanks for holding it down without me, guys. Wanted to give my quick thoughts at the jump here. Loved our energy in Saturday's game against Cleveland. Early start, but they came out just with a ton of defensive energy, especially. One thing, I wish we had more games left. I think our defense is more durable than our offense, even though our offense has been outperforming the defense over the last couple months. And if we get far enough, right, if the season is not ending in the next few games, I think we'll talk more about that. But Lakers get 11 steals and 11 blocks. I think the best version of this team's defense is one that gets a lot of stops. That's not true of every defense. Sometimes it's just good, solid positional defense, and you get the defensive rebound, but not a lot of turnovers forced. I don't think that's the case with this Lakers team, and they really did that, led by Anthony Davis with 6 blocks and 3 steals in that game. A 9-stock game is like a 45, 50-point game equivalent, and we don't always kind of celebrate it the same way. And so Lakers come out the next game. Pretty good start in that first quarter, but AD, as you guys know, gets hit in the eye, only plays in that first quarter, just like that last Golden State game. And it's funny, I feel like if we had one more big guy, especially one that could defend, we could have still made a game out of that, which I think speaks to my belief, at least, that this is a really good team right now. We might miss the playoffs despite that fact. But I was happy with how the weekend went, with the obvious caveat that it's a huge bummer. LeBron gets sick, AD gets hurt. Not really a great chance to win that game, but I love how we're playing. But at this point, D, we're at that point where, you know, got to go 3-0 from here on out. Got the Golden State game tonight. But those are my quick thoughts on this past weekend, Mike.
Real quick, because as you were saying that, Pete, you've sparked a different part of my brain, because I have been locked in to standings breakdowns and three-team ties. I was just looking at four-team tie scenarios, including either New Orleans or Golden State. Like, it's total chaos in the West. But as you were describing basically how the Lakers are playing, the pod yesterday, a lot of it was about, and a lot of what we've been talking about for months has been the Lakers at least have to get up to that, you know, 7-8 game. But again, as you were talking about how the Lakers are playing, there's a part of me that's thinking, well, they are playing better, not just Laker basketball, like for what they're trying to get across on the court, but they're playing better than these teams that are in the mix with them right now, for the most part. I'd say not necessarily better than Phoenix. Phoenix has also had their mm-hmm. foot fully on the gas pedal, but they're playing better than New Orleans. They're playing better than Sacramento. And, you know, tonight they have a chance at home to beat Golden State. So, like, let's say that things don't go their way, as in they just got unlucky. Anthony Davis gets hit in the eye on the same evening that LeBron James happens to be sick, and they both aren't out there in a game where I think they were playing better than Minnesota, and they lose that game. So that certainly implicates things in the standings. But even though it's a much tougher path, and I am not recommending it, it's not to me out of the question that the Lakers could win two play-in games. Based on how they're playing and this sort of collective team spirit that they have right now, it's still absolutely what they want to avoid. But I have shifted some based on this consistent run of pretty good play that they've had, as to like that they can't do it as before. And I just wanted to mention that as a what I think somewhat of an important factor, at least, that tells us about the basketball and not just all of these standings permutations.
So I 100% agree with that, Mike. And this is the most basketball LeBron and AD have played since they've been Lakers. And even adding one more game to that feels, I don't want to say it makes it feel tenuous, but it's already, the hope for the Lakers is that it will be a 100-game season, right around there. And like any way that you could cut those numbers down while still getting the team as far as they can possibly go is sort of where I want the team to be. And I think, Pete, that leads us into a discussion about today's Warriors game and about the import of the standings and the schedule and everything else. Both me and Mike are freaking math memeing these standings. There's like calculators.
I read those and I'm like one of those memes with all the, it's like trigonometry going around in my brain. I like, that's why, that's part of the reason I'm like, let's just win our games. Like, it's too much for me.
Well, Mike, I'd love to hear you sort of break down, since you're deep in the weeds right now about this. What is the importance of this Warriors game specifically around the standings? Before we get into any of the matchup stuff, which we've done a bunch with this team, the Lakers have played the Warriors as many times as any other team in the league. Maybe even, I guess, Denver would be the only team that's even close to that. A whole playoff series last year, four division games last season. This will be the fourth division game this season. So a ton of games between these teams. We're pretty familiar with the X's and O's, but there's a standings element to this game specifically, Mike, that cannot be overlooked.
Yeah. So just simply, and Darius, I know you're working on this for three things probably at the same time. The winner of this game is in the driver's seat for it at worst securing the 9 seed and therefore home court in the 9-10 game. And like, if the Lakers just win this game, the Warriors cannot catch them based on the tiebreaker scenarios, because it will be 2-2 with head to head. But the Lakers would then have the better, the next thing it would go to would be division record. And they would have like a very slightly but better division record than Golden State if they're able to win this game. So right now in the Pacific, the Lakers are 7-9 and the Warriors are 6-9. So there you go. Division is always the first tiebreaker if the teams are in the same division, which of course they are. So that alone, forget what happens in the last two games, is huge. We just saw what happened last year with the Lakers and the Warriors. And yes, the Lakers went in one game one, which was an excellent win. I think the Lakers are a better basketball team, but the Warriors, if they know they only have to win that one game and that crowd and stuff, that becomes your easiest ticket out of the postseason. So that's that. Let me just stop right there, Darius. That is the importance of this one before we get into any other scenarios.
It's crazy that we're back here again. One game for everything. And the Lakers have played so many of these games over the last few seasons. People forget, like, the season after the title, that was also a play-in scenario game where the Lakers beat the Warriors in order to get to the eighth seed, and then they played the Suns.
The LeBron blind three game, right?
I can't even see. I love LeBron. He's such a dramatic player within the context of everything, right? Like, he rises to big moments. He's telling people that he can't see. He's dunking and bringing on the crowd. I'm just so going to miss him when he's no longer playing. But Pete, it's like, we're right back here. One game for everything seemingly again. And it's like, I remember when the Lakers were bad, just as a side note, how much we missed the idea of like games that mattered and games that were meaningful. Like, they're playing out the stretch and they're 19-60 and you're just like, oh man, like, when is this season going to end? But these are the moments that you live for as a fan, but then they're so stressful that you're like, holy shit, like, just give me some reprieve from this too, right?
Absolutely. And it's a different experience than the other play-ins that we've made, right? So in 21, the back half of that season is marred by varying LeBron and AD injuries. And then there was a point toward the end of that season where it was, we had a bunch of guard injuries. So there were times where Caruso was like our only point guard, or we had to play Kuz at backup point guard type of thing. And it was one of those things where the Lakers were the defending champs and you knew they were really good and really talented. And being in the play-in was like sort of, it is what it is. We've been injured. And then missed the playoffs in 22. And then last season, getting to the seventh seed was like an accomplishment. It was, they grinded even early in the season before the trade deadline. I really thought they had a lot of resilience and moxie to bounce back from the 2-10 start. And so there was sort of a feeling of accomplishment. We got here, we got to seven, and now we got to win the game. And they did against Minnesota to clinch that seventh seed. This year, I have a feeling of annoyance of like, we shouldn't be here. We should have handled our business. We should have made some changes earlier that when we were floundering as a right around a 500 team for so long, the month of January especially stands out to me as one where not making the changes by then, you know, a coach is never going to nail every lineup decision that they make right out of the gates. But by then you've had enough time to see what works and what doesn't. And so I have that feeling, Mike, of a degree of annoyance that we are in this spot, but we are here. And like Darius said, that is something that we pined for in the lottery years and non-competitive seasons. And on top of that, like the team's playing its best basketball of the season. And it's really great to see. And so if we get to the playoffs, I'm really excited about what they can do once they get there, because I think that it's a really talented team, but they put themselves in this position and here we are. So let's take a break, come back and keep it going.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you stay fueled. They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
So, of course, the Lakers directly impacting that matchup with Golden State that's the most important thing for tonight's game. But a win also keeps them in play to move up, and they can, and they probably will if they go undefeated. There's even a chance that they would if they go 2-1, based on all of the stuff that we talked about yesterday with the cross-pollination and the different matchups between the Kings playing the Suns and the Pelicans, right? Those kinds of things. So that it kind of just keeps that in play going into a Memphis game. To circle back though with this Golden State game, and kind of, if the Lakers can't win this game or just don't win this game, then that is telling in its own right. I think like they are, if they can't find a way to win a one game scenario at home with all of this type of pressure, which is, by the way, a game that they've won almost every time it has come up, except against Denver, and to a lesser extent, except against Sacramento, which was like long enough away that you can make the argument that maybe LeBron and AD hadn't had it circled to this degree, where this one will very obviously be circled. So Denver is the only team that I've seen beat this version of the Lakers when they are fully up in charge at home in this kind of scenario. And that to me is going to be telling, because if the Lakers don't win this game, then a run, not only because of the likelihood of where they'll end up in the standings, but just that they couldn't call upon it when they needed it, will be telling in its own right. So I'll certainly be watching closely in that sense. And I guess, you know, Steph could hit 9 threes or something. Like there are scenarios, right, where Golden State's good enough to beat them, but the Lakers usually do find a way in this type of setting.
That's part of my annoyance, D, is it's like, we're not the only team that has guys like that. Like Steph could do something incredible. They've got other guys who can go off. And that's really the position we put ourselves in, is that just one great game from a great player can erase a lot of good work.
Well, I've always said too, as fans of an individual team, we often love to like look ourselves in the mirror and be like, well, all we had to do was this, right? If this thing only goes our way, then great. But the other team has coaches too. The other team has players too. And the other team has things at stake too. And the Warriors have a bunch at stake. Like, we just explained why this game matters to the Lakers. Now turn your hat around and put on your Warriors hat and be like, the Warriors are looking at this like, wait, we can get up to ninth? All we have to do is win this one single game? All we need to do is, right? And you can then start to put that on the shoulders of a team that has championship experience and players who have a ton of pedigree and a team that's also been playing well of late too. Guys, it's not like the Warriors have been floundering. They saw the Houston Rockets coming up full bore in the passing lane behind them. And they're just like, wait. Like, are we at risk here to not make the playoffs at all? And now look at the difference between the Warriors' record and the Rockets' record. They're like five games back now in the loss column, right? And that was because the Warriors won a handful of games in a row and like 6 of 7 and 8 of 10. And it's just like they stabilized themselves and they found something too. And so I know that I just said this last segment that these two teams know each other very well. But Pete, there are still a bunch of schematic things that matter in this game. And the way that the Warriors have sort of shifted their groups towards playing more of their younger guys, playing more of their athletic players, those are the types of ingredients they need more of against a Lakers team that has typically won these games against the Warriors specifically because they are the bigger, more athletic team. And now I'm not saying Trayce Jackson-Davis and Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga are going to be the full difference in that direction, because if LeBron and AD are playing and they're close to full strength, like, there's still problems for even those types of players. That said, the Warriors are clearly moving in a direction to better match up with teams just like the Lakers. And so from a schematic standpoint, how much of that plays into how you're viewing this specific game with the stakes as the undercurrent and context behind it all?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everything starts with whether or not AD plays, but assuming he does, I want to reference the Cleveland game and the bench groups in that and kind of apply it to this Golden State game. That was my favorite swing group game of the season, in that the Lakers started out okay in that Cleveland game, and then the bench group I didn't think was very good their first time around, that the AD group specifically at the end of the first quarter. But the LeBron group to start the second quarter was killer. It was LeBron, D'Lo, Dinwiddie, Jackson Hayes, and I think Torian was in that group as well. And they were killer. And that group especially can really put points on the board. And so if they're turning you over, if they're rebounding as well, they really push a lead ahead. And then in the second half, that was one of the first times, Mike, that smaller group that we've been lamenting, the Prince at the Four type of groups, I thought we saw what could be good about that group. I thought it was some of their best minutes, and what they did really well was switch, and our jump switches have gotten better in particular. And in the second half, the AD group was AD, Prince at the Four. You had Dinwiddie, Austin, and Gabe in the game. And so you got this small group, but probably our four best perimeter defenders without Vando, and putting Cam to the side, of course. But that's a solid group of perimeter defenders that I thought contained the ball really well and was able to hold their ground in ways that was important to getting stops. They also really help. Like, if you're going to be smaller, if you're going to play like that, you have to run. You have to play with the level of desperation that, of course, over the course of 82, Mike, you always make this point about conjuring that on a night-to-night basis, which is honestly fundamental to the argument about being bigger, because if you're bigger than the other guy, you're always bigger than him. You might not always be faster and willing to run or able to run, right? But in a game where everybody's really got their pedal to the metal, I thought Gabe Vincent was super helpful despite taking one shot. There is going to be a point where he has to not score 0 points in a game for us to be helpful or for us to win. But defensively, it was just some of the best work that they did as switchers. And so in this Golden State game, switching against them and the ability they run so much off-screen type of action that if you just get caught in a chasing them around, you're playing right into their hands. And so I'm super curious how the starting lineup with Rui at the three, remember that's not the greatest matchup for him against the Warriors, and what that looks like. But those are some of my first thoughts, Mike, is just that bench group. I think those are going to be important minutes, and starting to see some of the reasons why that can work in spurts here and there.
Yeah, I want to do a whole separate pod on before the season's over, on which I guess would be have to be this week, on Anthony Davis and DPOY, and I, because he's just the player that I think of when we're talking about limiting staff and limiting Golden State. But since we've done that before, let's save the larger combo and just try to think about Jared Vanderbilt and what he was able to do against the Warriors this year, in that double OT game, and he was kind of the point man of the key on that. How much can Gabe Vincent, and with what he's able to do, chasing around screens and sticking with a guy and just kind of the defensive care factor and intensity and toughness, how much of that, even again, less size, less athleticism, less all that, but just the idea of what he could do, say if Rui is having trouble, you know, in certain lineups, in certain contexts, or if it's, you know, whether it's Rui or whether it's LeBron. And I wonder if in the ways that Jackson Hayes has kind of been able to replicate the energy of Jared Vanderbilt, if what you get ball pressure wise and just toughness wise from Vincent defensively, how much of that can serve as it's somewhat of a replacement for Vanderbilt.
I brought up Gabe in three things that we'll post later today, Mike, just because he did not play against the Timberwolves, but he is going to play against the Warriors. And Pete, I have been super impressed with Vincent defensively, way more so than offensively. He is not yet back offensively, and he is clearly taking a back seat offensively. Like, he will look for his own shot, and there have been a couple of games where he's been aggressive, but for the most part, he has basically been content to move the ball, to drive and kick. He will shoot when he's open, but for the most part, where he stands out most is defensively. And I've loved the way he's been getting over screens. I thought his work against the Cavs and Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell was just great. And that's the type of defense you need to play against the Warriors. Like, there's a professionalism to his defense and his attention to detail that matters in all matchups, but especially against a Warriors team that tries to run you ragged and tries to deceive you, and you need to be technically sound against them. And I'm looking forward to Gabe sort of continuing that in his matchups against all of the Warriors. Like, they've got a plethora of guards, man. It's just like, it's not just Steph. Later on, it'll be Chris Paul. He could even find some minutes on Clay. He could find some minutes on Pajemski. There's a lot of guys for Gabe to defend, and I'm super happy that he's going to be back in this specific game.
All right, let's take a break here and come back and keep going.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One thing on the other end of the floor that I have my eye on in this game is the offensive production of D'Lo and Austin. I think they've got opportunities, but there's also some challenges. Andrew Wiggins will be returning. Golden State will have their full roster. And one thing that they've done really well is keep Austin and D'Lo funneled toward the sidelines. And so the way they'll guard them is they'll position their body to give up drives toward the sideline where help is waiting, and then they'll try to get a lot of on-ball deflections. And that's something that the Lakers have had some issues with over the last month or two, I would say, has been just a lot of, you know, deflected passes. And the solo Austin groups at point guard have had some have had a tougher go of it in those type of situations. But D'Lo came out with an absolute flamethrower against Cleveland, was amazing in that game. And in last year's series against them, Mike, both guys I thought were super important to getting that series victory. So talk to me a little bit about our backcourt, if you would, and what you're looking from them up against this Golden State team.
The Lakers backcourt, I sometimes will going most recently, of course, we saw them play against Minnesota, and Minnesota's got some real strong ball pressure, aggressive guards. And those guys specifically do seem to bother D'Angelo Russell. Reeves, I think it comes and goes. Sometimes that can bother him, but then he'll just dribble around the ball pressure and go all the way and finish. Like, so Austin's to me is not as easily simplified as to what kind of guys bother him. To it may be more that he's giving a lot on defense that night because he has to guard Anthony Edwards and maybe his legs aren't there completely. But so for the matchup with Golden State, you know, when they play Gary Payton the second, he is that guy and he can bother anybody, but he hasn't been getting a ton of minutes. And like with their starting lineup specifically, and when it's Steph and whether it's Pods or in recent times they've put Clay in there with another guy has been out, there isn't that same level of pressure on the perimeter. And I think that those are the types of games that Russell can get comfortable in. And, you know, not only looking for his own shot and some of his step backs and some of his transition stuff, but he can also run a little bit of screen roll and sort of use Anthony Davis. So I like the concept of Russell more in this matchup than in others. And, you know, so I do feel like that he can get going there. Reeves has been more. So is Reeves going to have to guard Steph to start? And yes. The answer is yes. And so what does that do to Reeves on the offensive side? Well, that takes a lot out. It just does, more than most matchups are going to, whether not just for all the chasing, but just the mental attention that needs to be required. So that's not to say that Austin can't find a groove on offense as well, but I would say LeBron knows the way to break Golden State's defense more than any other player in the world, and by a huge factor. And so this to me is more of a LeBron offensive game, and then, you know, Austin hopefully can hit a couple of spot up threes even if he doesn't have his legs, and then, you know, D'Lo as well on that end of the floor, with Austin having to focus more defensively and the little things. So Pete, I know you just asked about the guards, but this is where LeBron can kind of be a guard. Yeah. On offense in this way, and that, you know, lets Austin focus on the things that are going to be the priority for him, which, you know, which is kind of a crazy ask. You think about it, oh, Austin, hey, we know what your skill set is. You got Steph tonight, but that's where this Laker team has been. The good news for him, at least, is that AD is going to help. But nonetheless, you know, it's a big challenge.
I also think that's one of the things that Austin is better at, D, is that he's a pretty good chaser. Now, chasing Steph Curry around certainly is a whole nother ask, but I do think that this is something that Austin's pretty good at.
He is, but, you know, it's Steph Curry. And so much of this is going to come down to, is this one of those games where he comes out and makes his first 4 3-pointers and then gets all the back cuts because you're just like being run ragged? Or is it a game where he comes out and maybe is one for his first 4 from beyond the arc, and then in Steph's own way, and I've watched a ton of Steph Curry, starts to press a little bit, and it's just like, okay, like, is it going to come? Is it going to come? And sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't. When you guys were talking about Austin and D'Lo and their ability to create shots, I'm going to go back to, like, who is Golden State going to start? Pete, you're saying Wiggins is back. Great. Kuminga was back the last game, but he didn't start. Now, Steph didn't play the last game, and so they started this weird lineup where it was Pods and Chris Paul. They've moved Clay back to the starting lineup, and so I'll be interested to see who starts. They've been starting Trayce Jackson-Davis and Draymond together and sort of playing these jumbo lineups, which is what I was referring to earlier in the pod, with them playing sort of two bigs and going back to a classic Warriors look where Draymond wasn't always asked to play center. If that's the case, then who guards LeBron? Right. And do they put Jackson Davis on AD? Do they put Draymond on AD? And then if so, who does Jackson Davis defend? There's really no one for him to defend. Do they put him on Rui? It's like there's a bunch of tricky matchup stuff, because what the Warriors have loved to do, and you brought this up, Pete, is they've loved to put size on the Lakers guards and then keep them contained on the sidelines. That plan is less effective if they're not playing those two big wings.
Right.
that's what they were doing. It's just like it was Wiggins and Kuminga, and those guys were defending the Lakers guards, and then they were putting Klay on LeBron.
And so there's a decent chance that we don't see that look out of the starting lineup, but maybe those bench groups where one of D'Lo or Austin, especially if D'Lo isn't on the floor, but Austin is, and we're asking him to handle the ball more, maybe that's when we see that look.
100%. And this is where players like Dinwiddie and to a certain extent Vincent, those are the guys that are going to need to be able to beat ball pressure. What does that look like? And how do the Lakers manage the middle portions of the game? The thing about the Warriors, quote unquote, being a small ball team is they have thrived being a small ball team while being bigger on the wing than almost everyone else. Right now, that's less of a thing this season when their backup perimeter guys are like Pajemski and Chris Paul. And even to a certain extent, they're like, oh, okay, well, we're just going to press up on you. And doesn't quite work as well. But they can still go to GP. GP's a player who, Gary Payton II, he's a player who can get up into Austin Reeves a little bit and defend him well, pressure his handle. He'll do the same to D'Lo. And D'Lo's been trying to get to the basket a little bit more against ball pressure, and he's been effective that way. But it's a cat and mouse game then on the back line. Is Draymond in? There's so many things here that we could discuss from a tactical standpoint. But how do you see these battles of the benches? I think that's where the game can be won or lost, as much as we talk about the superstars. And if Steph goes off, then obviously. If LeBron or AD go off, then obviously. But it could still just be like, does Torian Prince have one of those games where he makes 4 3-pointers or something like that?
And to flip it the other way, Mike, Trayce Jackson-Davis, last time we played them, had a ton of points in a short period of time, I think in the second quarter against Jackson Hayes units, where there's a decent chance you've got Chris Paul and Trayce Jackson-Davis going up against Hayes at the five type units, and we may give up some points in those groups. And so I think Darius is onto something with that. This may be decided by the benches.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason to me that I think Golden State could go back to the usual lineup that they've used when healthy, and if they are having Jackson Davis then available in that second unit. The only trick is that Klay was not starting. And so even if Klay starts, they could stagger him and put him with those groups. And they're running this two-man action with Klay because they know that everyone's always going to react to Klay as a shooter. And Klay's just been throwing that nice little lob pass over the top to Jackson Davis, who has been just about the only lob threat that the Warriors have had in recent memory. That's just not a player that, because they typically had Kevon Looney in that spot as the other five that's playing. And that's one thing that he doesn't do. Looney is not a high flyer by any means. And I suppose you have to go back to like JaVale McGee back in the day when the Warriors were doing that type of action. And it's super difficult to guard against when you're so indexed and programmed to get out to the perimeter on this Warrior team because of all their shooting and specifically with Klay and with Steph. So that's definitely something that's going to be tricky. What I want to get back to you guys about is this, the rotation as it is, and what, since Vincent's been back, when he's been available, he is basically taking the minutes of Reddish and or Christie. And that's kind of what we expected. The only thing that we had wondered about before they started to do that was, well, what if you just, that's fine, he can replace some of those minutes, but how about Jackson Hayes also replaces some of those minutes? You know, as opposed to just playing Dinwiddie and Vincent, and then either Reeves or Russell next to Prince at the four. And that to me is still kind of the too small group that, Pete, you alluded to how there are some benefits of that as well. But I'm not sure that it's enough of a benefit, especially against the Warriors type of a team, you know, when some of that additional size and athleticism is partly what can break them, I think, especially on top of Anthony Davis. But I also don't want to expect that we're going to see anything different from what we have seen and what we expected. So it's probably going to be those smaller groups, and they're just going to have to survive enough, and Davis is going to have enough energy. And this is part of where I hadn't mentioned this earlier in the opening segment, but when Darius, you were talking about how each game is so important, and of course, and especially this one, but LeBron not playing in the back-to-back and getting an additional day off, and then AD, even if it lost the Lakers the game, did not have to play the full game. And so that to me is an advantage going into this one, where you almost like skipping a game at this time, even if it was not in ideal circumstances, you do get the advantage of them having some additional legs for this one.
Yeah, I thought that Minnesota game was the most losable of the games on the schedule for a variety of reasons. So it is nice to be able to get that. One thing about this game, D, that I wanted to throw into the mix too, is that the Warriors are a really good rebounding team, and we've been better at that lately, but they're really going to challenge us on long rebounds, especially. I'm of the belief that the Warriors are less of a too big type of team, that you would run two bigs against them a little bit less. We did that in the Minnesota game. Jackson and AD played together, but Cam was also in the lineup, and I was just like, you can't play a non-spacer next to two non-spacing bigs. Those should be max minutes. I understand they were trying to have a guy to guard Edwards, but yeah, the two big lineups, there's been so little of it done that even by this point, D, we're still on like, you know, chapter two of that at best in terms of its development. So part of that to me is sort of like that ship has already sailed. But I do think that against the Warriors, they are more conducive toward those smaller type of groups.
We're not in chapter two, man. We're in the table of contents. Yeah. Still trying to figure out like where the mapping is for all of this. The funny thing is that you would not typically say the Warriors are a team that you could play two bigs against, but if they play the lineup with Jackson Davis and Draymond in the game together, that's two non-shooters. There's also lineups where GP2 is in the lineup and Draymond is in the lineup, and that's, again, two non-shooters. Now, you can do that a little bit more with that then allows you to potentially put Rui on one of the non-shooters. And like, there's ways to optimize that defensively where you can like put less stress on Rui, because if he's a guy that has to chase one of these smaller players around, like there have been minutes where he has to guard Pajemski, for example, and like, that's not great for the Lakers. If the Warriors play two non-shooters, you could get away with playing two bigs if you are a coordinated team and you've done it multiple times. The Lakers just haven't done that when facing a team that doesn't play two bigs.
If I could be just very specific, one thing I'm worried about is like Chris Paul versus Jackson Hayes and those pick and rolls. I would much rather Jackson switch onto him and make CP3 beat him one-on-one. And if that happens, that's fine. It's probably going to be a mid-range jump shot. But Jackson in a drop versus Chris Paul and like Trayce Jackson-Davis, that to me is not going to work. And if we start out in that, we're going to bleed points.
Definitely. And there's a risk. I was going to say that this is sort of like a kitchen sink game plan style game where you have to treat it like a playoff game. But in theory, the Lakers could be playing this team in an actual playoff game a week and a half from now. And so some of this, too, is just like, how much do you keep in reserve, or how much do you go and try to win this game outright? But right, you don't keep anything in reserve. And so I would be doing things like switching that the Lakers have not done in previous matchups against this team very often. I would throw some of those things out there just in order to try to disrupt exactly what the Warriors are trying to do. Because if you go out there and run your same, I don't want to call it vanilla, but if you run your same game plan the entire time, this is going to be what, like the 12th time this team has seen each other over the past year and a half. There's a lot to go on here where the Warriors could settle into a nice groove, but maybe I'm just sort of getting a little bit like anxious about a game tonight that is super meaningful.
Well, you led me to, I was going to talk about LeBron in a different context, and you led me to LeBron in this one as well, just because in terms of either revealing or something or going to your best stuff, like I think that LeBron with the Warriors just does have all of the answers to the test. And I think Steph similarly, and Draymond, like they know what AD and LeBron are wanting to and going to do. And I think that more often than not, it just comes down to this LeBron has always had this physical superiority over them that they haven't been able to match, unless like when they had Kevin Durant, sure. But like that LeBron went 15 for 23 from the field against the Warriors in that matchup that AD left after the first quarter. And he can put his head down, and for as amazing of a defender as Draymond is, he can't impact LeBron that much when he puts his head down and when he wants to get inside. And they don't, Trayce Jackson-Davis isn't going to come in and do it. Looney's not going to do it. You know, Clay and Steph can't. So it's just that sometimes basketball can be that simple. And I think LeBron will, like against Golden State, hey, you can't stop what I do. And they also can't necessarily stop what AD does, even if Draymond can bother him, certainly as an ISO score. But like, they can't stop AD on the glass then, in that case, if LeBron's going. And AD can at least impact Steph Curry more than most players in the NBA. He did it in the playoff series. Steve Kerr mentioned it over and over and over. It's like, well, I mean, this guy's just wrecking the stuff we want to do. So that is where all of the other stuff, it's important, the role players, we talked about the guards, we talked about the bench rotation, but this, to return to the one of my oft-repeated things on LFR, this is where LeBron and AD come in to play. And this is what, I don't care what they do, that's what Golden State has had trouble stopping, and for understandable reasons, because it's a massive difference in athleticism and force.
What you were saying about AD and Kerr there is why I said at the beginning of the pod, I think our defense is more durable in big games, especially than our offense, despite the offense outperforming the defense for a bit, is simply because we have Anthony Davis and he's so distorting. And that was such a big takeaway from the Cleveland game, is that just the degree that the other team runs a play and you're supposed to get this advantage. He got one block where he dropped down on a nice dump off, but like the ball got swung on a cut to Donovan Mitchell and he immediately passed it one more station over to Allen, who was going up to dunk it. And AD dropped down from the elbow and got the block and it went going the other way. It was perfectly run by Cleveland in terms of creating the opportunity, and that's a basket against anybody else, but AD can make things not be that should have been. And so this is an unusual team in that I think we need AD and LeBron on the defensive end probably more than any other good team that has two max guys does. Obviously, there are top two scorers as well, but they've got more help on that end. But when they're really turned up defensively, they're by far our two most important defenders that are healthy right now. And so I think that viewing this game through a LeBron and AD lens on the defensive end, super curious what they come up with. All right, we got to wrap up here. Big game tonight. We will be back tomorrow to discuss. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Done.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move, two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable, for the victory, it's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant, yeah! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.